The Breakfast Club.
Hello, Whitey.
Good morning, Daniel. Just confirming the news that we had some serious millage overnight. Now, you would be asleep and wouldn't have known that it happened.
No, I was awake when it started.
Did you?
Yep.
Were you?
Yeah.
What, did you go to bed late?
I had a late night last night.
What'd you do that for?
I had a busy thing. Lots going on.
Oh, no.
Busy.
Problems.
Busy. Just life is full of busyness.
14.6 mils in the city gauge. But I can report that up to 22 mils in eastern suburbs because the front came through in a sort of a came sort of from the north northeast. It was an interesting sort of pattern.
Was it warm rain?
Well,
if I had gone outside,
really,
would I have been cold?
Because well, it's 9 degrees waking up.
Well, now,
yeah. So it came from an unusually. It comes from the west,
right?
But it came from the north northeast. And there was red on the radar. You know what I did last night?
Oh, red. You didn't sit there and just watch the radar, did you? You sound like a real radar nerd here.
You think, you question me sometimes. I'm not a team player and all this sort of stuff. You know what I did for you?
What did you do yesterday, last night?
Took a photo at 1:56 a.m.
Whoa. You reckon I'm going to bed late?
I've been asleep, but the rain woke me up.
Right.
This is what we saw. That was at 1:56 a.m.
That's a pretty graphic radar image you've screenshotted there.
It's red.
Red's the bad stuff?
Dark red.
Almost. Where was that? Where was the dark red?
Dark red was over Caulfield and over the city at this point in time. Predominantly to the eastern suburbs. There's a bit of red in Gisborne as well. So that was last night.
So poor old Jace, the track manager at Caulfield, has got a bundle of rain, has he?
Yes, because there's more to come. So we're going to be reasonably clear this morning into early afternoon, and then another front will come through again this afternoon, which may also have some thunderstorm activity. So 14 mils down in Geelong as well, just coming through, thanks to Cole the curator. Anyway.
And you know, Cole loves the millage conversation with you.
Now, today is the 14th of October.
It is.
When does the trade period start? It usually happens in October.
Normally around about now somewhere. Well, we've got the Buzz coming up. He'll give us the latest on that.
He'll preview it?
He'll have a preview for us, I'm sure. I'm sure that'll happen. What didn't happen yesterday, Whitey, is Tom Mitchell didn't find another club, and he's going to be representing Hawthorn.
Where was he going?
Well, everyone kept telling me he's going somewhere else. The Buzz, he's responsible for this. It's not really why I'm bringing it up. Did you see that they had to save a magpie out of the front grill of Tom Mitchell's car yesterday?
Is that right?
Yeah, true story. There was a magpie. Somebody left a note on his car. I saw this on his Instagram yesterday. Somebody left a note on his windscreen. There's a bird in the front of your car.
Like nesting, or did it get stuck in a collision?
We didn't sort of see the backstory. It wasn't like Australian Idol where you have the backstory with the bird and how you got in there and why you got in there.
X Factor with Elton and Childs living in a cave.
We didn't sort of get the backstory in the vision. But there was a bird. You got the message in the car. There's a bird in your car. You need to get it out. So he was in there trying to get this magpie out of the front of his car and couldn't get it out. Restricted off space, of course. Somehow had some gloves he put on. The magpie was trying to eat him and bite him and peck him when he was trying to help. So they ended up calling the RSPCA or some similar person, and they came in, couldn't get it out, so they've had to open the bonnet and then start unscrewing some bits in the car.
Right.
To get this bird out. They finally got it out, and it's all well and good. So they saved the bird. So another win for the Hawks over the Magpies there for Tom Mitchell. But it got me thinking, because my sister had told me on the weekend that her dog was going, she lives up in Kilmore, on the land, sort of, up there in Kilmore. And the dog kept licking the front of the car and scratching the front of the car.
You think it was an icy pole?
Over a couple of days. And she's going, what the bloody hell's going on here? And so he went there one day when she's out there doing some stuff with the kids. And she went over and had a look. And she could see something moving.
In the car?
In the car. In the front of the car. Similar sort of situation, but the front of the car. And the dog's going at the stupid bloody Kelpie dog's going at licking the car and scratching the front of the bonnet. And so she's really unhappy about the scratching going on, which is fair enough to the car. So she opens the bonnet and there's this rabbit who's seemingly living in the engine bay of the car, who sort of looks at her as if to say, are you quite right? So that she puts it down, panics because she wasn't expecting to see that. And then put it up again, and the dog sort of got going with the rabbit, and they had a bit of a chase around the paddock. But they had this rabbit who was seemingly living in the front engine bay of the car. I've never come across things like this. This is twice in a week.
It was, you know why?
Why?
Because it's warm. That's in that area of the car. So it's almost like sleeping with an electric blanket on.
Yeah, but I think...
Or a hot water bottle.
But it's been there when they've been driving, they reckon. That's an unusual place for a rabbit to be.
Well, it's very unusual for a rabbit because the question is how the hell did it get there in the first place?
Well, it's a great question. And does it come in and out? Is there a door somewhere? It got me thinking about lots of things. And then they check the other car. Oh, hang on, what's going on here? And there's a bloody rat's nest in the other car.
Really?
Yeah. So fair to say.
Don't they drive the car? So
yeah, they do. This is the thing. Both of them, lots. They drive them lots. Mm. So anyway, they've cleared that up. So they've got all these rodents and festy things out of their cars. So if you're in Kilmore region, there might be a few rats floating around looking for a place to stay. So there you go. Mm. Bit of feedback for Tom Mitchell there. But a win for Tom Mitchell yesterday and a win for the Hawks because he stayed, which is nice news.
It was interesting with Hawthorn. It ended up being that Luke Bruce was the one that was most likely or the one that at one point looked like he was the one that was going to go of the sort of the fabulous, the Fab Five sort of thing with all the...
He wasn't in the four.
He became
a fifth one.
Exactly right. Exactly. And I think that came about because of the Giants thought, well, if we're going to let Bobby Hill go, we need a small forward replacement. And so they thought, well, Chad Wingard won't come, that maybe we'll go for Luke Bruce. He's got that New South Wales connection, and they'd sort of had the deal done, but there was one small problem.
They hadn't called Luke Bruce.
They hadn't spoken to Luke.
They hadn't. Let's have a listen to Jase McCartney speak about that, because that was an interesting little development later yesterday.
It's fair to say the Luke Bruce one was pretty much done, except for Luke, I suppose it was the nature of how sudden it had happened and just trying to get your head around it within 24 hours. But that was, contrary to some discussions, that was all ticked off on.
Yes, but Jason, it wasn't, was it? Because Luke hadn't been spoken to.
Luke didn't want to go, didn't know about it, and said, stick it up your jabber.
But this is why I get frustrated with trade period, is that I actually don't think it would have been a bad thing for Luke to go to the Giants in a few different ways. But why are we doing this a couple of days out from the end of trade period? In fact, the day of trade deadline. How do they all of a sudden go, oh, maybe we should look at Luke Bruce? Like, they've got full-time people working on this all year that this happens so late.
Well, they had the Chad as their goal, as their target. And they were trying to work on the Chad, I imagine, as deep as possible. He was the one.
Yeah.
So then when your first domino falls... Well, you have a crack at another one, I suppose, just to try and cover your bases. But in the end, it didn't matter because Bobby Hill stayed. And Jason was talking about that as well at the Giants.
It was just all too late. And obviously, it was Essendon was the club. Collingwood were there, though. Collingwood had a strong interest in Bobby. But we weren't willing to entertain anything. So it just didn't go anywhere at all. Like, I think Adrian Dodora and myself might have spoken twice for less than 5 minutes.
So I need to just have a conversation with Jason offline here. So Bobby Hill we knew about at least on the weekend. And it was just a little too late, he said. It was just too late to get it done. Luke Bruce knew at 6:57 yesterday evening that he might be a Giant. And he wanted to get that deal done. Now, come on. You can't have your cake and eat it.
Yeah, I think it was a situation that, I mean, the Bobby Hill thing came late, and then they go, well, we've got to fight. If we're going to let Bobby go, we've got to have a replacement player. The Giants said that that wasn't necessarily the case, but it certainly seemed to be the case. The problem with Hawthorn's senior players, not all of them, but a lot of them, is that they're on big money. So a lot of clubs were quite keen on the likes of Bruce and particularly Gunston, but because they're on such big money at Hawthorn, they weren't prepared to take a significant cut or even a cut of any significance to go to another club. They're going, well, you know, we're getting really well paid at Hawthorn. We've been at Hawthorn a long time.
Had a really good time.
Yeah, don't really want to take a 200 grand pay cut to go and play somewhere else. I'll just finish off my career at Hawthorn. So I think largely what the list manager or the head of football said at Hawthorn yesterday was true in saying, well, you know, our guys love the footy club. They didn't want to leave. They've got some belief that we can go somewhere. I think that's largely true, but I think the other element is that these senior Hawks are paid so well, for them to move, they were going to have to take a cut. So Jack Gunston, for example, only played one game last year and has had some, you know, pretty serious back injury, back issues. He's on good money next year at Hawthorn. For clubs that were interested in getting Jack to come and play what I think is a really important role in a successful team, he may have needed to take $200,000 pay cut to do that. And he's like, nah. Well, and that's fair enough.
Why would you do that?
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
It's not like Hawthorn's going to be horrendous next year.
You wouldn't think so.
But I think the problem with Hawthorn is that they're going to be stuck in that, potentially stuck in the yellow zone. Or I think they're going to win maybe between 8 and 10 games next year. And largely the reason that's going to happen is that they've got that senior core of players that are really good players. And they'll win them games. Like Amira, Mitchell.
The Chad.
And then throw Bruce in Gunston and Bruce. You know, that as a collective five, if they play a lot of games together, they're going to win some games.
Yeah.
But Sam Mitchell's not looking necessarily about next year. He's looking about sort of 3 years down the track. Have they got enough young talent to be able to push through once the likes of Bruce and Gunston particularly retire? So that's why Sam Mitchell was a bit, love some extra picks to help, you know, the next generation coming through led by Will Day and Granger Barras and Giath and these sorts.
But we said, well, not just us, we spoke at the start of the trade season, so to speak, or the end of the home and away season. If you're Hawthorn, you try and get another pick inside 25.
Yep.
That's what you try and do. So everyone had that assessment of Hawthorn. So it was no surprise to see them try and do that, try and get another pick inside 25. Hey, you did. That was always going to be the challenge. They weren't able to get that. They've got 5-21-24. That's not a bad draft hand.
No, it's solid. And this year, half 24 might be as good as 10.
Yeah.
Or 8.
Yep.
I know Rammer's pretty bullish about what the top of the draft looks like, but I trust Rammer's judgment. But there's still a significant element of unknown, particularly if you're a Victorian underage player, because the lack of footy you've played in the last 2 years. That's why I personally would have been much more likely to trade aggressively through this period, because you know what you're going to get. We've spoken about that before. I think it's a real risk to be armed with a lot of picks and you're taking Victorian players where you don't really know.
Well, you take the interstaters then. But we saw a couple of clubs try and get a bit busy with their trading. But again, like we discussed through the week, salary cap constraints have restricted a lot of the movement or the opportunities for players to move. A move club, so not too surprising. The Herald Sun have reported this morning, John's paper, that Bruce spoke to GWS officials multiple times on deadline day. Well, I'm sure he did, because they wanted to get the deal done. But you can't just be pulling the rabbit out of the hat in the last 24 hours too often in this business, because you're uprooting people's lives very, very quickly.
Yeah.
None cooler than Johnny Ralph, the Buzz from the Herald Sun and Fox Footy, to wrap up the AFL trade period for us today on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Buzz.
Hello, boys. I was just thinking about Jack Johnson. You know, he was one of those guys who would have worn one of those sort of summer necklaces, you know, something, you know, attached to it or whatever. And myself and Whitey, we could never have got away with one.
No chance.
But you would have been one of those blokes from, let's call it
100%.
Who just thrived on it and didn't the girls love it?
Some sort of, I reckon Huff would have either had a shark tooth or a shell just around the necklace.
No, it wasn't a shark tooth or a shell. It was a leather necklace. But it was a little tiki, they called it. I think it was a tiki, they called it.
What's that? Like a Pacific Islander sort of...
Oh, I don't know, buddy, what it was. It was pretty cool, and I nailed it, let's be honest.
Did you ever have an anklet or a friendship band?
No, there's none of that going on. None of that going on. But I did nail that, Buzz. You've picked me in one there. Well done. Well done. You've got a great read on the human psyche.
Thank you very much. And, of course, Mark Robinson, who we're allowed to mock Mark Robinson because he's back and he did his top 50, and we're so keen to see him back next year. He's always had the toe ring as well, so yeah, I think that was from one of his African travels as well. So
can you hear me back?
So it takes all kinds.
The toe ring's unacceptable.
Ring?
And Robbo's a fan of the program. He listens a lot, so I'll probably get some feedback on that. But, Robbo, cut it off. Not the toe, just the ring. Just the ring. Hey, Buzz, who won the trade period?
Are we allowed to say, thank God that's over? with all of our media opportunities. You know, we've always wanted to talk up the trade period, and you know, not say look, it was the worst trade period of all time, but it was the worst trade period of all time. Who won it? I think North Melbourne probably won it from my point of view. Having had a deeper dive in Jason Vaughan Francis, and obviously you know, looking at the picks that Adelaide and Richmond handed up. Not only those as the pundits out there, but the absolutely people who know, who are they, the people who will pick those players, they think that this bloke is a once-in-a-generation talent. And so it's going to be so exciting for North Melbourne to have this bloke, who can, of course, play as a midfielder, but also as that half-forward and take hangers and kick goals and fend off blokes as well. And then also to get Callum Coleman-Jones in for a very little price and also keep Tristan Szeri. So Tristan Szeri, you know, who the hell is Tristan Szeri? But the more you look at him, the more you look at realise that he's a 22-year-old ruckman who, you know, potentially could be the heir apparent to Todd Goldstein. Now, it may well be that after another year without playing, you know, a significant amount of football, he leaves. But I would think that they would get a better selection for him. So I thought they did exceptionally well. I think Melbourne did so well because no one else was able to do anything. And so it probably hands Melbourne just a perfect chance to win back-to-back flags because, I think you very strongly make the case that they're the nine sides underneath them. Well, none of them were appreciably improved from 2 weeks before.
Yeah, I reckon that's one of the best points of the lot, Ralphie, that the whole thing around if the challenges to Melbourne didn't get better. Now, maybe Geelong did with Jonathan Segler. They've got a legitimate ruckman that I think will be better than Reece Stanley. But outside of that, I tend to agree with you. It's not like a Richmond's added another star midfielder or that, I don't know, whatever, like none of the other teams have got appreciably better through the trade period, which has tended to happen in recent times.
Well, even going back to last year, so you know, look at Geelong. You know, what are they? 21 points up, 20 minutes into a grand final. And then they go and get they lose Gary Ablett, they lose Harry Taylor, but they go and get you know the best Coleman medal, literally the Coleman medalist out there. They go and get Isaac Smith, who had a wonderful year, and they get Sean Higgins, who at that stage, I think we all felt was going to make a massive difference to them. So. What it means for me is that all of these coaches out there, rather than just relying on talent, they've got to coach their absolute bums off. Now, you know, that might be a coarse expression, but, okay, Kenny Hinckley, righto, you actually have to coach Connor Rosie and you have to coach Xavier Dersmer and turn him into centre square midfielder. You know, for the Western Bulldogs, okay, Luke Beveridge, you have to coach Tim English and turn him into the star ruckman that we thought he might once have been. You know, if it's Sydney and John Longmire, okay, which of those McInerney, Warner, Wicks types will be the new wingman there, the star wingman that you were just so shattered to lose in Jordan Dawson. And so, you know, it's mostly a talent game. You know, as Dennis Pagan would always say, you get me the best list and I turn them into the best team. But I think next year, you know, clearly with Sam Mitchell, but with so many other coaches as well, righto, you've got to sing for your supper.
Yeah, I think, Ralphie, the thing is that for whatever reason, and it seems that a lot of it is that everyone was full to the brim with their salary cap, there wasn't a lot of bravery going on, but you still do need two clubs to tango in that situation. The one thing, I want to mention two things to you. The Fremantle scenario, I actually think that they did okay because, yes, they lost Cherin. I think that's a big loss to them, but the way that they're able to replace almost with two potential players, with Clark and also with Brody. I think Brody's that's the one that's been underrated a little bit about how good a player he actually is and what impact he could have on Freo.
Yeah, look, you know, a couple of years back, it was about round 20 in 2019. He played on Paddy Cripps at Marvel Stadium and he dominated him. Whether he tagged him or was accountable to him, he had his 12 clearances himself. It's something like 20-plus contested possessions. And, you know, that was the glimpse for us. And we thought, okay, what's going to happen now? He did nothing after that. And so you talk to the people who know, and they say that, you know, out of the stoppage, spreading from the stoppage, he's treacle slow. But I think the exciting thing for him is that, you know, he knows very much where he stands now. The Gold Coast, probably the worst team in the competition, didn't rate him. So you spend the next summer trying to train with Nathan Fyfe or trying to train with David Martin. I'm sure he's done that before, but... Yeah, he's got massive talent. He's a former top 10 pick. And he can come into that team and say, right, I want to replace David Mundy in 12 months, but I'll actually try and replace him before that. I think he's exciting. And clearly they get the outside run they need as well. And Clark, look, it was damaging. It went on for a long time. We spoke to Stephen Wells last night who denied that he'd had been hung up on by Jordan Clark. But Jordan Clark as well couldn't get into a Geelong team where a lot of other kids got chances ahead of him. This is his chance to actually prove that he is a former pick 15 who is worthy of Fremantle's attention.
He's quirky, he's antagonistic, and Kevin Bartlett says he's very, very unlikable at times. And I won't have it. I quite like the company of Dr. Turf. He's back with us again. Hello, Turf.
Half, you never showed that, actually. We weren't together years ago, but it's nice of you to say it now.
Well, I thought I'd just sit on it for a bit.
Whitey?
Now, my understanding is you were part of the rocket ship that William Shatner took to the moon and back. Is that true that you were on that ride?
Is it just me, or is that sort of... irk the irrits out of you.
Oh,
that mine's bigger than yours with him and Branson and all that sort of stuff.
Well, Elon Musk,
and
all those blokes.
Seriously, he's gone 60 miles into space, and supposedly, you know, he's gone near Jupiter, basically. But in all honesty, what's he done? He's gone a little bit higher than the slingshot on the Gold Coast.
Correct.
Has he not?
Correct.
So what is this fixation with it?
I don't know.
We're talking about
what
that
are you
earlier
trying to achieve?
They've only really gone to the outskirts of space anyway. They sort of have a little bit of a taste of it, and back down they come.
I don't get the fixation with it, to be honest.
What's 100 k's from here, from Melbourne?
Seymour, I suppose.
There you go. So they've gone from here to Seymour.
Is that right?
In a rocket ship.
100 k? I suppose it is.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, about that. Kilmore's about... I always think of it, it's an hour's drive.
And Seymour a little bit, too.
And turn right
to get to the racetrack. That's the second reason I know. Because you don't go through Seymour anymore, of course.
No, you don't.
So you've gone from here to Seymour in a rocket ship. That's what you've done, Turf?
It doesn't.
Congratulations.
It doesn't seem quite as brave as the Apollo missions.
No.
I must say, you know, I went to the Houston Space Center a few years ago, and I'll tell you how brave those blokes were. The dunny on those rocket ships. You did not have room to move your elbow 1 inch either way, which I would have thought made the whole experience a little bit daunting. I don't know what it was that struck me.
How do you clean up, Turf?
You know, I wasn't going to go there.
Well,
you've taken it one step too far. I can actually prove it because I actually have a photograph of the dunny in my phone here somewhere.
You took a photo of the bogger.
I did. You know, you have psychiatrists ring in and explain it to me. But it was difficult. It was daunting. It was confronting.
It would have been. Maybe living it.
Particularly if you ate Mexican or something on the trip. Anyway, yeah, the whole space thing. I mean, you know, would you do it?
Australia's going to the moon. You saw that yesterday, didn't you? We're going. Nobody else has been there, though, reckon.
Are we trying to get into the moon dust sort of business or something, are we? But what else is there? Do they leave the flag there?
Well, they play golf.
Did they leave the flag there? They must have. Because remember they planted a flag.
Well, you got to leave the flag in when you play these days, too.
Yes, you do. I don't think... Have there been any cases of COVID on the moon?
I don't think there has been.
I'll tell you what, we're in trouble if there has been.
Apparently, there's been some fragments found on the moon from viral...
From the wastewater.
Because they did take a golf club with him.
Yeah, they did.
I can't remember which one it was.
7-9.
No, which astronaut? who was the one that...
I don't know.
Who was the stiff one that stayed on the ship?
The third?
Was it Mike Collins? Was that his name?
Great question.
Well, one had to take the photos.
I'm going to find that out.
I guess so. Good point.
Jason Dunstall calls himself that person when he tells stories.
Unless, of course...
Gordon Coventry and Tony Lockett are Buzz Aldrin and... oh, gee whiz, I've lost the... Neil Armstrong.
And
Jason Dunstall calls himself that other guy in the ship.
Really?
I remember
think
the first
it was Mike Collins, but I don't really...
So what happened with him is, can you just look after the ship for us?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Not much
imagine if he got out and realised he'd locked the keys inside. But there was a story, quite a big sort of, you know, those people love those conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
And there was one that the whole landing on the moon thing was fake.
Michael Collins, you're spot on, by the way.
And it was filmed. And that Stanley Kubrick, who was one of the great master filmmakers of all time, had been, you know, put his tools
choreographed it
and filmed the whole thing, you know, instead of making some of the sort of famous movies that he made, he just took a bit of time out to do that rot. But that was just one of those ridiculous, you know, it was a little bit like the Harold Holt and the Chinese sub.
It came and got him.
When Holt went missing,
yeah.
I don't even know, what are we talking about?
Well, a long time ago.
69 or something, I don't know when it
Stand
was.
By.
But there
back
was,
in the day.
Back in the day, yeah, back in the day. But there was all of those rumours that...
67.
And the funniest one at the time was they'd been picked up by a Chinese sub.
I have heard that story.
Who had somehow sailed into Port Phillip Bay, which is no, actually the ocean, but down there in Portsea.
Opened the hatch, sucked him in.
And escaped the Fox Mansion overlooking the, you know, Portsea, sort of evaded to the security that that facility has, and had picked up an Australian Prime Minister.
Just happened to pick him up.
I didn't buy it for a second. I don't know about you blokes.
Just happened anyway, to know where he's going to be at the time.
We digress.
There is some feedback coming through from the government turf. They are mindful. They're listening. I want you to know that. No one can travel to the moon from or space from Melbourne at the moment.
It's more than 15.
It's outside the 15 Ks. And travel time is after curfew. So we can't, do that at the moment.
Yeah. So, Turfy, now you know that the bloke, the restaurateur from Melbourne has got 3 months in prison.
Is it worth it?
Well, he's got 10, hasn't he?
So, well, yeah, but that's all 7 months is suspended.
Right, yes.
Yeah. So now you know 3 months in jail to go to Perth to watch Melbourne win the premiership and then celebrate with the players in the rooms and then out on the ground afterwards. Mm-hmm. If you could, if you knew that was the case for 3 months jail, would you do it?
Unequivocally, no.
Tempted?
Nah. Oh, 3 months in the pokey. please. But it's a harsh sentence, isn't it? Seriously. Is it? I mean, I'm not for 1 second condone. There's a fair bit of totter about what he... About like. but
I think
3 months?
There.
Yeah.
I mean, I know he's breached, you know, one rule after another, one law after another, and arguably jeopardised, I suppose, the health and et cetera, et cetera. And but 3 months in jail?
Well, Sidney Stack was in jail for...
Not that long.
No, but he was there for a while.
He was there for a while.
And then what did he do? Jump over a back fence or something of where he was staying?
He was already there.
Wasn't he? Anyway, no, would I? No, I wouldn't. No.
Well, 2 weeks?
Oh, here we go. We're in a barter here.
How
2 weeks. Well, what were the conditions like inside?
Well, I think they're in the low sort of minimum security type set where it's probably reasonably comfortable.
Has he got Sky Channel?
He's got
seriously.
He's got racing.com on his phone. He's got some coverage.
Okay, so
3 weeks for Sydney.
3 weeks for Sydney. These bikes have got three. On top of the 2 weeks they've already had?
No, I think that would be included. Yeah.
To be served concurrently.
That's right.
3 months. Nah. 1 month. Oh. Look, without being a smart aleck, I've seen one, a Melbourne flag. So, I know it's been a fair time between drinks. But at least I've seen one in the flesh, so perhaps it's not something that I can, you know, I've got that up my sleeve.
Yeah.
I suppose the question is, how long would you do?
Off the SMS, let us know. 0416 90 52. What are you prepared to do? How long are you prepared to wear the stripy pyjamas? Like?
No, it's well, I can't imagine security.
H Division.
Is Ronnie Barker in there?
I don't think Ronnie's in there.
One of the great TV series of all time, Porridge.
No doubt.
One of the great
anything that has Ronnie Barker in it's good.
The scene of him being the scene of him being doing his medical is worth watching the entire series over. When one of the lines in there is he's standing there and there's a jar about 10 or 12 feet away that he has to give a sample.
Right.
And the warder says, I want you to fill that. And he goes, what, from here?
Did he fill it from there?
No, it was just one of the a million great lines in one of the great English comedy series of all time.
Nice work. Turf, what did you make of the 1,000 Guineas meeting yesterday?
To put it delicately, I think it's a reflection of one of the plainer bunch of three or four fillies we've ever seen. And the thing is, I mean, the Colts dominated the fillies as two-year-olds. And when you look at Animo and Freddy's...
Artorias.
They are a seriously good bunch of three-year-old colts. They can sprint. Animo Guineas winner as well, heading to a Cox Plate. The fillies were always a bit plain last year, and I think you look at, and I'm not saying Melbourne's any, the Sydney fillies are equally as average, I think. They took turns to win their races. There's been no dominant three-year-old filly. So I think it was just a reflection of a fairly average sort of bunch yesterday. I mean, it was a competitive sort of race. And,
pretty compelling win by Yearning, wasn't it?
No, it was a good win by Yearning. I'm just saying going forward, as a form student, I mean, you know, like it's a three-year-old Phillies Classic and she's a Group 1 winner and all that sort of stuff, but I don't think it'll go down as one of the great Thousand Guineas as a, because it's relevant for me going forward form-wise. Whereas the Colts, you can't argue the quality of the Colts.
I was talking to someone about this last night about the likelihood of a really wet Caulfield Cup. And
is it what is going on? Is it happening? We went on the rain last night.
You need to speak to your brother. He'll be able to help you out. I mean, we had ran about 20 mils at Caulfield overnight.
Was it? Was that much?
Yep. And there's more rain expected. There's more rain expected tonight and then again tomorrow night. Can you remember wet Caulfield Cups over the time?
Yeah.
I mean, the one that comes to mind for me is Viander Cross.
Of course. Lord Reams was a bog.
What about in the last 10 years?
It was the Gaze one with the brown and the white epaulettes.
Yeah, Desperado.
Henderson colours. That was pretty wet.
That was really wet.
You know, I think there's been, more importantly or more poignantly, can you ever remember a nice, warm, sunny day for Caulfield Cup Day?
No, I can't.
It just always.
Well, in 2002, when I got to speak to Greg Childs, I looked at that this morning. That was a nice sunny day.
Yes.
That was 20 years ago, of course.
That was a powerful win, that one. But, yeah, I don't. And going through, and I must say I've done a bit of form in the Caulfield Cup, and there's horses that handle slow ground, but there's no compelling heavy track form.
No, that's why I asked you the question.
You know, and in my mind, form-wise, the gulf between, say, dead and slow or even good and slow, the gulf between slow and heavy is equally as dramatic. There's a million horses handle slow ground that don't go a yard in heavy ground. So it's interesting because if it gets to nine, let's say, it's going to really be interesting as to, to see who gets through it and who doesn't. And the other thing is, it's race nine. Mm. So there's going to be a fair... If it rains during the day, which is the worst thing that can happen to a racetrack, it's bad enough, a big downgrade because of rain overnight and before a meeting. But when it actually rains during the meeting and the track opens right up, it becomes a raffle, I reckon.
Yeah, so incentivised drawing so wide as... Now, incentivised was a $1.90 favourite before the barrier draw. Yeah. Now he's pushed out a little bit. History says that they don't tend to win at that sort of price. I mean, it's only happened two or three times in history, recent history anyway.
We very rarely get one that
that's
short.
True
and
too.
He's deserved it. I mean, there's inarguably... He won me over in the Turnbull. The Maccabi was good and everything. The Turnbull was just a fantastic win by a racehorse. And, he deserves his position. I mean...
Gate 20?
Yeah. I mean, I like him and Delphi, and they've got 19 and 20. Maybe it'll be okay out there. Mm. I don't know. Way before your time was, I remember How Now drawing Barry. I think they only had 16 starters that year, and she drew 16 of 16. And famously, Stocker had her on the fence going past the winning post with a lap to go.
1936.
So, they might just cross and, have lovely runs. You just don't know. It's not like there's huge on pace in the race. I mean, I'm not even sure who's going to lead, to be honest. But yeah, a little bit awkward out. Of course, they come into 17 and 18 after the scratchings, but it's awkward. It is awkward.
Matt Stewart is RSN's chief racing editor, who's jumped in the studio with us with the great Dr. Turf. Hello, Matty.
Hello, Daniel. Doctor.
Matty.
Adam.
He's cast, and you're
got
not.
That out of the way.
Whatever happened to that?
That's the niceties for the morning.
Yes. Where's the podcast? He's cast, and I'm not.
He was too podcast, difficult to work with.
Right, fair enough.
Seriously, the demands.
Doc was a diva.
I was a diva. We're doing a podcast, and he nicks off to his caravan.
And slams the door.
And
he won't come out. Now, listen, there is a serious issue that's emerged, but we've had a few of these COVID-related issues pop up in racing. There's been spot fires left, right and centre, including one or two at Ballarat in the last few months. But Last night we learned of that two members of the Mar Eustace stable had tested positive to COVID, which is a bit of an alarming first. Dave Eustace put into isolation. John Allen stood down from yesterday, all amid getting tests for COVID. So we just wanted to get the state of play with where this situation's at and where we go from here. Jamie Steer is the head of integrity at RV, and he joins us. G'day, Jamie.
Morning. How are you, boys?
We're well. Hey, we're well. Doc's not, but the rest of us are. What's the state of play here? Jamie, can you just sum up what's happened and where this goes from here?
Yeah, so just to clarify one thing in the intro there, at the moment we only have one confirmed positive case.
Okay.
And there's obviously yesterday, when we became aware of that, we enacted our usual procedures as quickly as we're able to with the assistance of the stables and Ballarat Turf Club and many other people. So we immediately tested a large number of people, around 120 in total. We're still awaiting for the PCR results to come back for those tests. Hopefully they'll be available this morning and through today. We implemented our contact tracing that we do as a matter of routine, and we've identified all the crossovers and contacts, and we've isolated people where we felt appropriate through the level of contact. All those people, as I say, have been subjected to testing. And now we just await the results and we see what the outcomes are. And then we put in place a framework regarding whether people are required to continue to isolate and have further testing. And, of course, it won't be a one-size-fits-all. It will depend on everyone's sets of circumstances. So we go through each individually and assess them. But one of the main things is, at the moment, with the help, as I say, of the Ballarat Turf Club and the stables involved, we've been able to ensure that the horses have continued, or the stables have been continued to able to be operated. There are adjusted work times and arrangements in place, so the horses are getting exercised, and at the moment it's play on.
It sounds like a large number of people, and obviously people will be thinking about containment now. Are you confidently it is contained with the contact tracing, or you know, could this just spread and spread, and will it have an effect on the staff and staff numbers at Mar Eustace? Just on the containment issue there, are you confident that the mechanisms have contained it, Jamie?
Well, Matt, we've shown sort of over the last 18 months that the systems we've put in place and the contact tracing has been effective, and we're confident that we've implemented the correct procedures. I think everyone will know and acknowledge that, you know, when you're dealing with coronavirus, it can be unpredictable. So you can't give a degree of certainty, but you can progress on the basis that what you've done appropriately, and that has produced the correct outcomes in times gone by. But, you know, we wait and see. And as I say, key to how we address this going forward is the results that will be coming through throughout today.
Northerly down to the 200. Childs pulled the whip. He's the leader from Freemason. Fields of Omar's coming down the outside. And then came Republic Lass. Northerly in front with 100 metres to go. Fields of Omar, Republic Lass are closing. Northerly in front. Fields of Omar tries hard. Northerly. Northerly. Northerly beats Fields of Omar in a photo in a Grand Caulfield Cup.
It was a beauty, no doubt about that, 2002, and piloting the Great Northerly that day was Greg Childs, who knew plenty about Group 1s and Big 1s as well, and he joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Greg.
Morning, morning, Daniel, Adam, and Dr. Turf there too.
Yes, I am.
Sorry about that, Greg.
That was a fantastic win by Northerly. He sat outside a pretty tough pace. You took off on the home turn and fought them all off. It was so beautifully rated, Greg. Was it a difficult race to ride?
Thank you. it was a great race. It was a strong race. He was going into that race almost unbeaten in that preparation, and he'd been winning very similar to what the favourite is. What's the name?
Incentivised.
Incentivised. Winning weight for age races all the way through. And he went in as a favourite, but it was a little bit of a concern because he was carrying top weight, 58 kilos. I went in with a lot of confidence, ridden him all in his lead-ups, and he'd been winning and we felt good.
Ollie had ridden him most of his Melbourne, or a lot of his Melbourne starts. Obviously, Paddy Payne also won a Cox Plate on him. But you were on him that entire preparation, which, as you say, was Craig Lee, Turnbull,
Underwood,
Caulfield Cup, Cox Plate. It's a reasonable preparation, Greg. How were you on him that prep?
I actually, when he first came over from Perth, my manager, Dale Verhagen, he was manager for Paul Harvey at the same time in Perth. So he was working two states. And he seen this horse of Fred Kersley's coming through the grades. And when Fred decided to bring him over for a race in Melbourne over the year before, 2000, I think it was, 2001, he asked Fred about, could Greg Childs ride the horse when you bring him over? And Fred said, yeah, sure, because I was going well, riding lots of winners. And my first ride on him was a win at Caulfield. I just can't remember the name of the race. I'm just trying to think. Just as I'm talking, I'm thinking. And then I rode him, I won on him. And then the following year, he only came over for a couple of starts. I think I rode him. That's right. I rode him. I won on him at Caulfield. Brett Prebble then rode him. I was committed somewhere. And he ran fourth. And then I got back on him and I won the Australia Cup. And then the following year, Damien Oliver got on him when he came over for the Cox Plate. Yeah, look, I just can't quite remember how it all worked out. But Damien rode him for a year or Damien rode him. Yeah, no, look, I can't remember. Sorry, guys.
That's all right. Yeah, because I was going to ask you, Greg, in that time, it was Sunline and it was Northerly. Yeah. And you had an association with both of them. And it was that juggle as to, you know, would they avoid each other so you could ride both of them? And they were both such superstars of the sport at the time. What were the differences with Sunline versus Northerly? And could you separate the two as to who was better? Although it's too different.
Yeah, look, I was fortunate during the 2000 and 2001 Cox Plate year in that I was having the 2002, sorry, Cox Plate year. I was riding both horses. They had both going down different paths. At that time, Northerly wasn't actually heading towards the Cox Plate. They were just keeping that up in the air. So I was fortunate enough to ride both of them. Two different paths. Northerly, he won the Craigley Stakes, the Underwood at Caulfield. He then went on to the Turnbull, and then he went into the Caulfield Cup. All weight for age races and in top form. So Sunline was going down a different path and heading towards the Cox Plate as her main aim. When Northerly won the Caulfield Cup, Trevor McKee was there. Sunline was actually, this was her last year and trying to win her third Cox Plate, having four tries at it. And after I'd won on Northerly in the Caulfield Cup, Trevor came down and said to me, Greg, if you'd like to get off Sunline to ride Northerly in the Cox Plate, if he was going to go that way, don't feel obliged to ride Sunline. And naturally, I had a quick think. Well, I didn't even have a think. I said, Trevor, I said, I could never get off Sunline. There would be blood in the family. It would be my blood. I'm staying. And I had the choice, and I rode Sunline. We ran fourth, and Northerly went on to win.
Stephen Wells has joined the Breakfast Club. He's the Geelong list manager. They've got statues of him down there. He's a wizard, they tell us. And I want to see how he assesses the AFL trade period that completed yesterday evening. Wellsy, good morning.
G'day, Daniel. How are you, fellas?
Great to have you with us. How do you sum it up? Wellsy, the last 10 days, 2 weeks of free agency and trade for the Cats, what would you give it out of 10?
Oh, hard to give it a rating, but what we did do, well, we had all three players who left, actually, we would have liked to have kept. So the players that left requested trade, so that's a bit of a negative. We weren't looking for that sort of involvement in the trade period, but once it happened, we tried to turn it into a positive. So I think we got a good fair deal for all three of those players who left, and hopefully it turns into a successful trade period for us because the draft picks we've got can help us bring in some new talent.
What were you trying to do? What was the theme or the goal going into the period, Wellesley?
Always looking to improve your draft hand. So we didn't target this year, unlike some recent years, we didn't really target bringing players into the club. Jonathan Segler joining us was like for like there. Once Darcy Fort wanted to go, we quickly assessed that we needed to bring in another ruckman. But apart from that, it was always going to be to try and improve our draft hand, and that's what we've done.
Jordan Clark was the story from the Geelong perspective, certainly outside. I'm not sure how much of it was going on inside and how stressed you were about the situation, but he was the story outside the club. Well, is he and the will they or won't they sort of relent in terms of Geelong? How hard was it to let him go because of the talent that clearly he does possess?
Oh, very hard. We wanted him to stay, did everything we could to convince him to not request a trade in the first place, but once he requested a trade and let's be honest, it was the second year in a row. So, he was looking for greater opportunities. Even though we thought those opportunities might come his way from this year and beyond, or next year and beyond, we said, well, we'll deal with Fremantle, and provided we can get what we think's at least a very good trade, well, then we'll consider doing it. And that's what the way it turned out. Andrew Mackey from Geelong and David Walls from Fremantle did most of that negotiation, and it took a long time to get it done, but in the end, obviously, both parties were happy.
The talk before the trade period, Stephen, was that it was going to be a fairly flat period, and it certainly turned out that way. And I wonder whether COVID has impacted on that in any way, given that there were salary cap sort of reductions last year, and maybe there's been some back-ending going on in contract. Did that impact on it at all?
Yeah, no doubt it did, Doctor. The direct impact or indirect impact of reduced salary caps last year meant that a lot of clubs had to defer contract payments from 2020 into 2021. So that clearly has an impact on available spend this year or for next year as well. There'll be an ongoing impact with that. List spots were very tight as well. And I think a general reluctance, I suppose, lack of knowledge to go with as the unknown a bit in that been hardly any VFL football played over the last 2 years. The draft's a little less, we're all a little less certain about the draft than we might be normally because of the COVID not being, games weren't played at the lower level. So you're right, the COVID over 2 years has had an enormous impact on, I reckon.
Just speaking of the draft and the fact that there's been so little TAC Cup played in the last couple of years, I mean, what research, what due diligence can you do into these young kids when you don't see them plying their trade?
We've been lucky in all the clubs. Firstly, all the clubs have got are on a level playing field because we've all got the access to the same amount of information. So from that point of view, we all will still cope. But we've been lucky. There's been footy in South Australia, Western Australia, all around the country except for the eastern seaboard a bit. And the research we do, there's school footy and there's the limited amount of footy that they have played up until this year that we can always go back to. All the testing still gets done and the psych profiling. We're able to interview the players normally over Zoom these days. But, it is a lot less information than even we had last year. Last year, even though they played less footy in 2020, they played less footy. They had a full season in 2019, so you could refer to that and do a bit of projecting, etc., etc. But now we've had 2 years with very little footy. It makes it even harder. And then I think even into next year, even if we get a full year of footy next year, the 2 years of lack of development that some of these players will have had, most of these players will have had from certainly Victoria, it's got to have an impact somewhere, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just, Wellesley, on Jonathan Segler, I think you've done well there to get him, and you know whether he's going to be the number one ruckman. I guess that he's got to work that out with Reece Stanley, but you've got it's a legitimate ruckman that the Cats have now got.
Well, you're right. Once we wanted to keep Darcy Fort, and we're happy to. But once he wanted to go for what he thought was a better opportunity, we looked at it, and then but we couldn't let that happen without bringing in another ruckman, and most of them were contracted or unavailable, but Jonathan became available, so we were certainly keen to pursue that one. And you're right, he's had great experience at a terrific club through a successful period, and he comes down to the club now to, as to work with Rhys Stanley as the two experienced veteran ruckmen, you'd call them, both being 30 or so, and with a Sava Radical there behind them, and then we've got three other young players on our list that are developing ruckmen. He's got a big role to play for us, Jonathan, and hopefully he can help us win a lot of games of footy.
Head looking for two, and he should get it. He does get it. What a magnificent innings from Travis Head. 200, and not done yet.
Oh. No, he wasn't, Adam. Adam Peacock there on Fox Sports. Fox cricket yesterday in the Marsh Cup game between South Australia and Queensland. Travis Head brought up his 200th with that little moment. There was 30 more left in the tank off 127 balls. It was something else. Alex Carey was riding shotgun in South Australian colours in their win over Queensland yesterday, and he joins us on the Breakfast Club this morning. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, guys. I just apology in advance to the listeners. I've got my little four-week-old in my arms. If there's some background noise, that's all that is.
No apologies required at all. That's magnificent news. What name have we got there?
We've got Clementine Rose Carey. So she's going well. The way we're working is I normally wake up early, grab her before I head off to training and give Eloise, my wife, a couple of hours sleep.
So are we full Clementine or are we running with Clem?
Let's go with Clemmy. Yeah, that's what I roll with.
All right, Clemmy. Well, good luck to Clemmy. Great to have her with us on the program this morning. If she wants to get involved, let her go. Speaking of letting him go, now Travis Head decided he was going to let him go yesterday with the Willow. You got to watch it all unfold. You were the first man out to get into the crease, and you got to watch this extraordinary innings. What was it like?
Yeah, I guess it was pretty lucky. I did get out early and let him go out there and do his thing. It was unbelievable to see that partnership unfold, and then for Trav to go on and make it's a really, really big score in that format. And we've been struggling of late to win games of cricket, and the skipper said, I'm going to do it for us today. And 230 is just incredible in any format, but in one-day domestic cricket, I think it's the fastest double hundred in history. I don't know, speechless, I guess. Hard to put into words. You just go back there and watch it, and you just think it's just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it was brutal, Alex, the way he did it, but still conventional at the same time, which I think was one of the features of the innings. And he started the year so well. We spoke to him a couple of weeks ago. He's trying to get back into that test team. I know it's a different form of the game, but have you noticed anything that he's particularly improved, or is it just more of the same from a very, very good player?
Yeah, I was sitting there yesterday and I knew he was a really, really, really good player and one of the best batters in the country. But as I was sort of watching it go from 150 to 200 and then, you know, that last 30 runs, you sort of just tell yourself, like, this guy is one of the best batters in the country, if not in the world at the moment. He is full of confidence, the way he rocks up. You wouldn't know if he's had a good day or a bad day. He's just, fully focused on helping us win games of cricket for South Australia and just goes about his business. And, you see him peel off runs. The scoreboard just flows so easily. He hits balls that hit harder than I've seen anyone hit before, but then just plays, beautiful cricket shots in between. So there's a lot going right for him. His winter wasn't the best of standard from his point of view, but for him to come back and really dominate in the first few rounds just shows how good a player he is.
What about, the skill was on display, no doubt about that. When he came back after being dismissed, Alex, what was his physical condition like for scoring so many runs in such a short period of time?
Oh, look, Trav's not the... Oh, look, how do I say? He's not one bloke that's going to go out and run, the extra miles and do the extra gym sessions, but he'll hit more balls. He'll do all the little things. He'll field, extra time and do more skill work than probably physical work. That's not saying he doesn't do that, but he just does it in the sense that works for him. He bats long hours. He's got a lot on his plate, still a pretty young captain of the state and underperforming at times. So, sorry about that. He's, he's doing everything right off the field, and now it's starting to show on the field.
Hey, Alex, I got to ask you. Hopefully, you can answer this question. You've got to be quick.
Be quick.
How are you going? I mean, obviously, you've lost your place in the Australian team for the T20 World Cup. I was rapt to see you get 100 straight away to start the Shield season. How are you going personally with the dealing with that disappointment at the moment?
Yeah, it's. I wasn't overly surprised. I underperformed in that format for Australia, so it was disappointing not to be there. I wasn't overly surprised. However, I would love to have done a lot better in my opportunities that I did get in the last 12 months in the T20 international scene. But I still feel like my cricket is going really well. I feel like my one-day stuff for Australia has been really consistent. My big bash stuff. So it's just difficult at times. You come in at different positions than you would normally, bat in T20 cricket. You got to go out there and smack them like big Andre Russell. And unfortunately, I'm not built like him. But I still feel really confident in my cricket, and I've still got lots of aspirations and goals to go after. I'm not disheartened at all by missing out. I'm really determined to continue to improve my game and reach that sort of ultimate goal of playing Test cricket if things align and I can go out and play with lots of freedom and have lots of fun. And If it all falls into place, then great. If not, then, I'll be doing my best to do that.
Same colour. It's dominant in the Melbourne Victory uniform, the Navy. And Robbie Cruz wears it with great distinction with the white as well. And he joins us, the striker from the Victory. Good morning, Robbie.
Morning, guys.
Great to have you with us. Now, you're not too far away from actually getting into some serious action. It kicks off in just over a month, the A-League, for you guys. What's the world like from a training perspective at the moment?
Yeah, I think pre-season's been really good. Obviously, with the new coaching staff and a lot of turnover and new plays, it's been the extended pre-season's probably been good in that aspect. But, it's obviously dragged on quite a while now with, I think, it's close to 4 months before the season starts. So it's been a long grind, but I think the team's come along really well. And, we've been working really hard under Popper, and it's on the training pitch, it's been really good.
So it's around about this time, Robbie, that there's almost a spring in the step because you can see the finish line, that you don't have to do the pre-season anymore and regular season training comes in and you get to play, get reward for effort. Can you sense that in the group at the moment?
Yeah, for sure. I think, obviously the first block of pre-season's, a big grind, a lot of running and a lot of work. I think now we're getting closer to the season. You can, like you said, you can see the end and start to get into the competitive games, which is what everyone wants to do. We're really looking forward to righting the wrongs from last season. It's there's no hiding the fact that the last few seasons have been really poor from the club's perspective. And I think so far this pre-season has been really good. And obviously, it all comes down to how we perform in the games in the season.
Now, Robbie, how many times has Tony Popovich reminded you during the off-season that Melbourne City were the champions and that they finished ahead of you? Is that something that is used as a bit of a spur?
It's not been discussed too much. Obviously, as individuals, the success Melbourne City had last season, the last few seasons, they've been probably the standout team in the comp. It's disappointing for us and for our fans because Melbourne Victory has been probably the strongest club in the history of the A-League. So to have the last season, The poor performances and all-round effort from the club was really disappointing. And obviously to see your cross-town rivals have the success they had, it hurts a lot. It hurts the players. And this pre-season, I think it's been one of the driving factors for us to turn things around and obviously to get back to the club to the level that it's been at in the earlier part of the A-League. So there's been a lot of hard work in the pre-season. Obviously, we've still got 5 or 6 weeks to go before the season starts. And I think the group will be really ready come round one.
It's obviously hard to tell because, as you said, you're still 6 weeks away from needing to be at your best to start the regular season. But does it feel different under Tony Popovich? You've obviously got a lot of other new players that have come as well. But for someone that you've been at the club for so long, do you feel that this is better? It's the way it used to be.
I think it's a lot. obviously not begrudging anyone in the past or what's happened, but I think obviously this preseason has been, very professional, and there's been no stone unturned. I think everything's been done really methodically through the coaching staff. They've primed the players really well. Everyone's looking really fit, and tactically the players have grasped what the coaches have been trying to implement. So, you can see the work we've been doing from the start of the preseason to now, the way the players have taken all the advice on board has really been translated into the games we've been playing. So I think we're looking really good. It's obviously you don't know how well everything's going until you start playing competitive games, because that's where it all counts.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.